You're listening to the Monday Christian Podcast, the program that helps you put into action the truth of God's Word that you hear on Sunday to your everyday life on Monday. And now, here are your hosts, Ezra Beyer and David Hartkopf.
Well, hey there, welcome to the Monday Christian Podcast again. And for those of you that watch online, you can check out our channel on if you go to mondaychristian.com or go to the audio page. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. It's an easy way to do it, and you get to hear our new theme music that we have. So
the pretty theme gangster music too.
Love so much, right, Dave?
Yeah, I mean it's good. Yeah, and I like the new voiceover. I mean, we're going places, man. That's right.
I know it's unbelievable how hard you work for like just putting together a simple voiceover with audio mix. This is why I am not a musician.
Yeah, I think people don't realize when they pay a musician or somebody, a graphic designer, yeah, you know, oh, you only did 40 seconds worth of work, but there's also a lot of craft involved. So I have sympathy for starving artists, as it were. Yeah.
How many hours did you put into playing the trumpet, like before you started doing gigs?
Yeah, I mean, I started in fifth grade, but I mean, there was a time when I was playing professionally, for a little over 5 years, I did not miss a single day of playing the horn, and that goes vacations, anniversary trips. I remember driving around in the car with Jessica and Mackinac Island, buzzing my trumpet mouthpiece.
Like the Michael Phelps of trumpet playing.
Maybe that's just because I wasn't talented enough or something, but you have to like keep all these muscles in shape. And so, yeah, it was like a constant grind. And so when somebody's like, it costs $50 for you to play my wedding, I'm like, that barely covers the gas money. You know, it's very interesting. People's and, you know, like people always want discounts from, I feel for folks that, you know, do that kind of work where everyone's just like, oh, we just need this for our, you know, can you just do this for us? Can you just do this for us? And I'm like, yeah, the going rate for that's about $200 an hour, but yeah, sure. I'll help you out, you know? So yeah,
I have a pet peeve with this, and it's funny cause I've experienced both sides of the aisle with this, cause I do a lot of gigs for people, and I've experienced some people that are super generous, great, pay on time, that kind of stuff. But here's why I have pretty much exclusively don't do for people that I know anymore, because you could probably guess why. Because there's always higher expectations and lower pay, and it's a bad combination if you're doing the work.
Yeah, I side paint in the summer, and my standard line is now, I just don't work for people I know because of that very reason. And whereas I'm in the professional world, and the guy I work for, actually I know him, but like he's contracted me out, and he told me this summer, hey, you haven't raised your prices in several summers. I want you to raise your prices for me. So he's telling me I'm too low, and I'm like, I'm pretty happy with what we're doing here, but it's just a different way of sort of thinking. And, you know, God forgive us when Christians aren't generous.
I know. And this is one of my things. Janann sometimes gets on me because she's like, man, you know, you're too generous with different things. I don't know. There's sometimes I am probably generous to a fault where I don't like to accept people's generosity, and that can be a bad thing. But if people are doing stuff, like I like to, you know, hopefully compensate them well. Because it just doesn't reflect on you very good if you don't. So
yeah, I think it's one thing if they volunteer their time.
Yeah.
But my former pastor, I saw him over the weekend. I was in Michigan for the last few days officiating the funeral of one of my uncles, and I saw him there. And he works for a funeral home whenever they need him on a contract basis, preaching the funeral of people that don't have pastors and stuff like that, sort of being there for them in the time of need. And he said, you know, I make $200 a funeral, and I'm thinking like $200 for two hours. That's $100 an hour, but you're also paying for his pastoral experience and his and all his knowledge of the scriptures that has taken all this and just all this understanding of grief. And so it's not just like you're paying somebody to do a task; you're paying for their expertise and their. And so I just, yeah, man, pay people, be generous.
That's right. And so if you're listening to this, you better subscribe to the Monday Christian Podcast and leave us a 5-star review and a donation. How's that?
Oh man, that was like classic turn of phrase there, man. You got him.
Yep. Today, as we're recording this on a Friday. It's released on a Monday, but we're recording this as we have the events of Roe v. Wade come out, and with this being overturned, obviously a historic day. And what's interesting, earlier on this week, the topic we had scheduled to discuss was just the whole prospect of enjoying life. What does that mean to enjoy life? Kind of an interesting, thought provoking title, but yeah. So it's like but when this came out, it was like, oh man, this is quite a day. And so, what were your thoughts as you observed the news that came out? We knew it was coming, I guess, for a little bit.
Yeah, it was interesting just to see the reaction. I mean, social media provides instant feedback, and the people with the quickest keyboards, they get to speak first, you know. And I think I noticed the divisiveness, and also just joy. I think I almost started crying in my office. Seeing, you know, just that everybody is made in the image of God. And also, like, today is about that, and we should focus on that. And also thinking next steps. And frankly, even since our conversation as with Mike Bird and others, just thinking about what does it mean to be pro-life all across the board and being consistent. Because I think some of the pejoratives that are lobbed either way across the political aisle are kind of fair. I mean, they are a little bit of a whataboutism sort of deal. Well, what about this? Well, what about that? But I think there's a nugget of truth there. And I think the body of Christ needs to think about the way forward and not only rejoice at this historic thing that I think affirms the image of God in every human, but also how do we more fully manifest that maybe after birth, and maybe rethinking some of our positions politically when it comes. I think I saw Marco Rubio or somebody saying, I'm introducing legislation today that is going to provide healthcare and more benefits for mothers that are going to be having children. I think that's like that's a great thing. Let's talk about that. When somebody says, well, what about this? I say, yeah, let's talk about that. What about, you know, paid family leave? What about mothers that have babies and have a father figure there to help? What are you going to do for them? I say, hey, let's talk about it. Let's figure out a solution, because I want to be thoroughly consistent in my affirmation of life. And I honestly don't know that I'm quite there yet.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And I've had how many people that have kind of talked about this, that they kind of talk as though, well, Christians, you know, they're those people that, well, I'm speaking to an empty chair here. Dave had to get up to turn his air conditioning off because we're professional like that. And, you know, Dave, you know, it's funny. My dad used to do all these recordings when we were younger. And this is hilarious thinking back to this. And he was on like radio programs, I think, that covered like half of Canada. We were over like Africa a lot, had a number of big stations in the United States, but on a, you know, kind of interesting hours, sometimes middle of the night, you know, and had some of the most interesting encounters from that. People would call up or connect or come visit us as a result. And what was so funny, we would always record upstairs around this dining room table, and we would be getting ready to record, and all of a sudden he'd stop and he'd say, hey, wait, the fridge is going. And every one of us would be like, you can't hear that. Right? He so would make us take the clock off the wall. If there was a clock ticking, he would make us take the clock. Or if the computer was running downstairs, we had to go downstairs because they had those big fans back in the day. We had to go downstairs and turn off the computer. And so I come by this very naturally.
I feel like I should put that in the show notes, because I appreciate, I like could live in an ice rink. I'd be so happy. But yeah, I think I just need to remember that. So anyways, you were talking about,
well, when we get our studio audience and all that kind of stuff, like the big people, then we can set it to like 50 degrees, right? Like, like all those people like David Letterman used to do and freeze people out when they're,
yeah, the studio, it's one day.
Yeah. Oh, where were we at? Talking about, I guess just the whole idea of, where were we at?
Consistency. consistency across the board with being pro-life and what that means.
Right.
And just the historic, like, let's rejoice about this. And also, let's start asking ourselves, now that this is enacted, we don't want to be folks that are inconsistent in our pro-life positions.
Yeah.
And I think we should really think and pray and think about next steps.
I think Christians should be yes and people generally speaking, right?
Yes.
And you talk about, so one of the confusing things, I just don't understand this. Maybe it's because I'm Canadian, right? But we talked about the importance of, you know, you see, this is my opinion, you see some of the people that are protesting against this are very much in favor of, you know, gun rights, right? Like that we need to regulate, you know, everything. And, but then they're not for this. And then the flip side with Christians, they're like, no, don't even have a conversation about guns, but then talk about this. And I'm just like, no, I mean, like, just be for life. I mean, and so what does that look like? I mean, I know it's sometimes it looks differently in different cases, but I mean, it's just when you get locked into one system, one way of thinking, just looks really funny when you pull back and think about it from a broader perspective.
Yeah, I think what Mike Bird was saying last week was just dead on, in that the media and other things are the enemy of some of what we want to happen, which is good civil discourse in a society, is being killed by extremism on both sides. And I think you see some manifestations of that today. January 6th.
Yeah.
We have to talk about these things. One thing I would say, I was listening to someone the other day, actually yesterday, driving home from Detroit, and they were talking about how pastors should not shy away from warning their congregations about the dangers of Christian nationalism, political idolatry.
And right.
I think that's a good point. That's fair. But I think that mostly needs to be said probably in conservative-leaning audiences, right? Isn't that at this point? Okay.
Probably generally.
And frankly, those people have the most to lose if you're a conservative in a conservative environment,
right,
saying like, hey, you can be happy that, you know, your candidate got in or whatever, but that's not actually discipleship.
Yeah.
And I think that pastor should talk about that, but it actually costs him something. It doesn't really cost... Mm-hmm. A progressive church, that's like you're selling yourself to these people. I think in a progressive church, I would say, yes, this conservative pastor should talk about this, and you should speak clearly on issues of human sexuality and what's happening today. You should be very clear about affirming life in you know, womb to tomb, as they like to sort of say. But that would cost them something.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes when we get in these discussions, it's very easy for us to sit in our own bubble and sort of pander. And I guess what I'm looking for, and not just like looking to other people and saying, you have to do better. I want to do better about personally looking at the scriptures in community and really trying to integrate this across the spectrum in my life.
Yep. Well, here's a very thought-provoking question, right, that I think some people have raised online. But think about this. I mean, would we have this decision that we just had with Roe v. Wade if Trump wasn't elected president? Now, that's a very uncomfortable question for a lot of people to ask, including myself, because I'm just not a fan of President Trump in so many ways. But the reality is, if he hadn't been elected, probably that would not have been the case. And so what do you do with that? So on one hand, you have people that will say, well, this is why President Trump was such an incredible leader. And this is why, yeah, he had his few flaws here and there, right? But overall, this brought about the greater good. I think you can have it both ways, where you just say, well, I mean, God uses, you know, fallen people all throughout human history. And I think it should also make us a little bit more charitable the way sometimes we think about how, I know there was different Christians that said, how dare you, you know, if you ever voted for Trump, right? And it just makes you realize, like, there are different reasons for why people vote the way that they do, support candidates the way that they do, all that kind of stuff. So I know that raises a whole different can of worms, opens a whole different can of worms. But it's, again, it's having those uncomfortable conversations that both so-called progressives and so-called conservatives might not exactly want to have.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that God takes the heart of the king and moves it wherever he wants to? And so even somebody like Donald Trump, who, as these hearings go on, sort of,
yeah,
the layers keep peeling off.
Yeah.
And I think it's dangerous when we look to any political leader on any side of the aisle, or look to anything outside of God as sort of, I mean, as Mike, I keep talking about Mike Bird, but he said so much good stuff, but he's not the Messiah. This person, you know, look at all the good he did. Well, it's a pretty mixed bag. And really, why did he do this? I, whatever the reasons behind it, I rejoice today that, that the court has sort of affirmed what I think the scriptures teaches, is that we're all made in the image of God and that life is valuable. And then there, we need to wrestle with what that means in real time.
And another point I want to make that isn't probably very popular with people that hold a lot of the positions that I hold is that I do think this reveals another reason why our Christians' involvement in politics, Christians' involvement in being proactive in their communities and demonstrations, marching for life, all these things. Sometimes by nature, I tend to be more of a pacifist with those things. That's just by nature. But I think it's times like this where you realize, and I'm so incredibly grateful for all the countless men and women who have stood outside abortion clinics for, you know, decades, year after year after year, protesting this you know, horrific injustice against the unborn, and I'm so thankful for that. And so I think it's a lot of times, again, quote unquote, more progressive Christians tend to look at people like that as, oh, they're just a little bit strange. They don't, and you realize that no, that they actually, from that, you might disagree with some of their views on things, but there's some really positive fruit that can come that shapes society in a better way.
Yeah, my eldest daughter is in a pro-life club at the school she's at, and when she came home and was so excited about joining, doing all these things, I honestly didn't know what to feel, because they're going to these abortion clinics and not everybody's happy to see people doing this. Right. She actually went in, was it January, to this pro-life march in D.C. and Jess went with her, and I'm just like, well, I'm not sure about this, but at the end of the day, I was like, man, she's got this heart to stick up for like people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to affirm that, and as we go along, say, and I have, sweetie, when we say pro-life, we not only protest the injustice that affects poor and vulnerable communities the most, abortion.
Yep.
But we also say, how do we take care of the poor and vulnerable in society that are here with us? Exactly. How do we make it easier in some cases to adopt? How do we make this process cheaper for people that really want children in their home?
Yeah.
How do we get money and funds? And immediately the reaction from some very conservative people I find puzzling. You know, what about creating a welfare state? What about? I think we need to think about hungry kids, single moms. I think we need to. And if you look back at, once again, the one string on my guitar these days, but if you look back at church history, you know, the church was really concerned about taking care of the widows and orphans.
They're founding hospitals. Just,
yep.
Yeah.
They were the ones doing that.
Yep.
And I think we need to. Us who sit in the suburbs too often and ignore the plight of the poor, I think we need to think about what it means to be thoroughly pro-life.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more there. And, you know, I think sometimes Christians get a bad rep and people will say things like, you know, Christians, they're just, you know, they're pro-life in this one area, but they're not pro-life across the board. I think, this is just my perspective, I think that's a bit of a myth, in my opinion. Josh Howerton, I think, he's a pastor.
Yeah.
Texas, wrote a whole thread on this a couple of weeks ago, and just talking about the percentage of Christians that adopt and comparing it to those that aren't Christian. And again, it's not presenting Christians as, oh, we're so morally superior to others. But it does dispel some of the myths, I think, that Christians don't care about the foster care system. This is just my experience. Maybe it's your experience that Christians are totally double-sided, are that way. For me, though, my general experience with Christians has been amazing there. They are some of the most generous, giving people. And so I think that's a bit of a myth, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think there's always room for improvement, of course. You know, if anybody says, they could do better, I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. But to your point, I see that it is Christians oftentimes that are doing these things. I'm not sure it's anything but an awareness issue. Like sometimes there's only so many things that can captivate our attention. And I think in this moment, this is the time to say, no, we're also great on this. Mm-hmm. We also are going to be, by God's grace, great on this. We're not just going to defend this one little turf piece because
you know,
because we're Republicans. I'm really quite unconcerned. And as one of our friends pointed out, hopefully we'll have him on in the next few weeks, Tom McCauley said, I'm relatively unimpressed and mostly disappointed in most politicians. I'm not looking to, I'm happy for people that are involved in politics and that are called there, but I'm not looking to somebody in a political office for salvation. The only thing that the only thing that's going to change the minds of those people protesting today who are out there screaming for abortion on demand. I mean, that's, if you look on as an outsider, it just looks
just horrific,
horrible.
When
the only thing that changes them is the gospel.
Going back to Michael Bird, when he was talking about gambling and how big gambling influences how people vote in Australia, we look on and we're like, oh, that's horribly corrupt. But we have a lot harder time looking at our own sins. And I think people both sides of the aisle, but just the fact that you could celebrate that, right? I mean,
only God can raise them from the dead and change their minds. And that's what you see. I'm thankful for the laws that maybe slow the spread of evil.
Yeah.
But to really become a pro-life society,
yeah,
we need Jesus.
Right.
And if anything, seeing those videos today sort of underscored that for me.
Well, and here's maybe just one more point on this. Whenever, look, again, I don't want to compare abortion to gun violence. They're two different things. And I find that whenever you compare topics, then you end up just getting into troubles because the comparisons always fall apart somewhere. But when we think of gun violence, a lot of times conservative Christians I've seen, when a shooting happens or something like that, they'll say something like, well, what you just said. They'll say, only God can change the hearts, right? And only God can move. And I say, well, yeah, but you don't take that argument to abortion, right? You understand, yes, right, God can only change the hearts, but you also don't want unborn babies in their third trimester murdered, right? Yep. You don't want that. And the same way with gun regulation, right? But you can still do something about it. You can still, there are some things that you can and should, I think, support that would make it better. And that's part of, again, I think N.T. Wright talks a lot about this. It's not just we're on heaven and then, man, we get to, we're on earth and then we get to heaven and it's all better. We're part of bringing God's kingdom to earth. We're part of understanding it'll never be heaven down here, but it's part of Christians' responsibility is bringing light through tangible ways and slowing the spread of evil.
Yeah, and not looking at things from a American viewpoint tends to be, because I think rightly a strength, we have individual liberty here, but I don't just, part of loving my neighbor, my Christian call is that I see things from their perspective. And so I was talking to somebody this morning in my office, and both of us, I owned guns, and I said, I am, if it means that it saves the life of some child, I'm willing to, if someone's going, these wait periods are so long. Well, if a longer background check and a longer amount of time before and limits the people that can have access to these, and it would save the life of a child. Oh, I had to wait 2 weeks longer. I'm not willing to do that. I have this right. I'm like, I just can't. I can't. We might lose some listeners over this.
Yeah,
I don't really care, but like, I can't square that with the scriptures.
Well, it's accessibility. If you, again, not to compare the two, but I'm going to compare the
two. I know.
You have abortion clinics in every street corner, and you have guns in every household. And you can, again, you can say, well, it's not the abortion clinics, it's not the guns that are the problem. But I just saw someone today making an argument on Twitter about that now we're just going to, you know, abortions are always going to remain, but now there's not going to be safe abortions. Right. And I just think it's such a poor argument, because it's like, it's again with guns, people will get depressed and very, you know, and if they have easy access to that in times of hard times, you tend to make the easier decision and to end in your life or maybe ending someone else's life. The same thing again, maybe we'll lose some more listeners here, but I think with semi-automatic weapons and things like this, or like AR-15s, things like that, just my opinion, where you have the capacity to go into a school. Again, people say, well, it's not the gun, it's the person, right? But again, it's in instilling laws that slow the spread of evil. And to me, again, that's just something I'd be willing to give up. But I say that as a non-gun owner and as a Canadian as well.
I would say as a gun owner,
what it's worth.
As a gun owner, if you're not at least willing to have these discussions with people, then I don't, if it really meant, now not every person out there suggesting, like, we need to bring our ideas to the marketplace. You should at least be willing to have a conversation. That is the Christian thing. We do not want people dying. We do not want people committing suicide. Yeah. We believe that everybody, as Dallas Willard said, is made in the image of God and meant to house the fullness of God. If we value life, then we have to have these discussions. Even if we end up disagreeing, we have to do at least the hard work of talking with one another and saying, what can we do to preserve life? If we're pro-life, that I think that being said, that's not. I'm not depressed today. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
And anybody that is pro-life should be happy today.
Yeah. Yep. No, I couldn't agree more. And so, let's just switching gears here. I guess thinking about the next few weeks, we have some exciting guests coming on the podcast. Bill Ury next week. One of my favorite professors. I had him for a couple of classes, systematic theology classes. But he's such a practical guy. So he does I think it's called The Hour of Holiness. It is a podcast and it's a radio program as well. But it's so fascinating, and he talks about holiness. Over and over and over again for literally hundreds of hours of audio that you can listen to on iTunes, Google Play, wherever. And so we have people like him. You mentioned Tom McCall, Asbury Theological Seminary, I believe, coming up. My buddy Joel Chop, who we worked together in Toronto for a little bit, but he's edited a new book and that's going to be coming out. And then several others that I'm super excited about. But the whole idea, and we'll be talking about the importance of loving God, having holy character, and all these things in the next several weeks. But I think a big thing that I've been thinking about recently is what does it mean to enjoy life? What does that look like for the Christian? And it's something I've wrestled with a little bit, because sometimes it's so easy, I think, in our culture to be discontent and frustrated. But I've been thinking, I mean, when you hear that phrase, Dave, what comes to your mind?
I feel like if you look, people that do eisegesis with the Bible, like grab one little part and then just, so Jesus said, in the world you will have trouble. They hated me, they'll hate you. And so then I can justify this, hey, you're probably going to be unhappy most of the time. And then I see these other places in Philippians, for example, where, you know, rejoice, you know, and give thanks to God in all circumstances, come that you'll have life and life abundantly. Mm. And so you seem, and I think there's this, as you start weaving together this tapestry, like you said, it's a yes and what does it mean? Christians should be happy, because our happiness is rooted in the death and resurrection of Jesus. And so because of that, our temporary circumstances shouldn't necessarily color. And I think you see this, you know, when people say, I had a lady at our church when I used to pastor a little country church here for about 4 years. And she said, I was going through cancer. It was a really rough time for me physically, but people always ask me, Pastor Dave, why are you so joyful? Why are you so happy? And she would tell them, like, straight up, I'm in a win-win. If I die, I'm going to be with the Lord. If I stay, I'm with my family. And so I figured, and it was just like this nonchalant, simple country faith. And it was profound. And when I think of enjoying life, she was an amazing cook. She had her own brand of ketchup. She made everything herself. But just like when I think of enjoying life, I think of Sister Carolyn. And what are your thoughts? What do you think of? Because like our backgrounds sort of move us one way or the other. Like I know some people that are just so serious all the time. And then I know other people, it's sort of a hedonism thing. Like whatever they feel like doing, they do all the time. And I don't think that's happiness either. So what are your thoughts?
No, I mean, a quiet trust, I think, comes to mind. I think of Janelle Keaton. I used to work for Troy Keaton in Virginia, lead pastor of Eastlake Community Church, and was just watching one of her videos that she posted this morning online. And she has aggressive cancer in her body, and it's pretty serious. Been dealing with it for a while. And I just think of the way that she's responded to it. And I know, as she shared, there's been some horrible days in the quiet of their home. And I just, I couldn't imagine their journey that they're on right now. But the joy that she has and the optimism and the hope that she has is just astounding. And it contrasts with so many individuals that I've met, interacted with, that are maybe in their early 70s or 80s or something like that, right? Or they're getting towards the end of their life. And it's interesting because for years, they haven't really thought about God. And then all of a sudden, there's this tremendous drop off to where they realize, wow, like, is this all there is? But then for the Christian, so like for people that aren't followers of Christ, aren't Christians, it's like, you know, you kind of go through life and you go up. But then as you get towards like death, then it's like, oh, there's this. But for the Christian, it's like, it's more a little bit more like that. You have your ups and downs, but as you get closer to death, then it's like, as Dallas Willard said, when I die, I'm not sure I'll know that I've woken up, right? Because hopefully I'll be so close to God that it just feels like a natural transition from this life to the next.
Isn't it interesting in our culture, as where, I mean, we do have so much. We're not, for the most part, fearful about where our next meal is coming from. And I know that in the West, I would say that's pretty much more reality than not. And I know there's a lot of exceptions as well, but so I don't want to like just, but if you look at all of the good things that God gave us, food, relationship, you know, in the context of marriage, sexual intimacy, like so many good gifts, family, enjoying nature. But when you make good things ultimate things, it seems like anything outside of God just doesn't satisfy. And if you read through Ecclesiastes, I mean, if you want to talk about a guy who, if there was pleasure to be found in money, Solomon had it all. If there was pleasure to be found in sexual relationship, I mean, his exploits are well known. But his writing there is just so profoundly applicable to our culture right now. And he's kind of like throwing up these like signposts saying like, just trust me, I've tried this. There's no down this road. If that good thing is made an ultimate thing, you will not be happy.
Adam and Eve, right? That do you trust that what you have right now, you can have satisfaction? Well, no, I think there's something out there that, you know, the fruit in their case, that's better. And I think it's the same thing that we wrestle with. And you know, it's so easy to learn the hard way, isn't it? And I think that's one of the challenges as a Christian, is to choose, are we going to learn every lesson the hard way, or are we going to walk by faith that what God says in his word, that we can rest in that and we can have joy in the midst of pain? I mean, we're bringing on some interesting people over the next several weeks, some who have gone through, so Ben Adams, gone through incredible time serving in the military, then having PTSD afterwards, or PTS afterwards, and just, you know, and he's going to share about the ways that God spoke to him through some difficult seasons. Bekele Shanko coming on, I think in August. again, incredible story. And here, I don't know about you, Dave, but I've seen this so many times. Christians that have gone through some of the most horrible things are often those that talk most about the goodness and faithfulness of God.
Yeah, and that is what bears witness, I think, to the reality of the Christian message, because if you just do the math from a human standpoint, I think the world looks on and says, like, how can you honestly say these things after you've gone through what you've gone through? Yep. But the truth is they've had the Lord in them and working through them and near them and under them and all around them. And it seems like he manifests himself in the closest of ways when we're most needy.
Yeah.
And I think as there's something here, because our culture is still the same culture, is still in many ways the same. We're all people. And so we have this mistaken notion, self-centered notion, that we are going to make our own selves happy. And if we could just get that promotion and get here and get that. I'll never forget the interview. I think it was Tom Brady after he won his fourth Super Bowl.
Is that the and one we did or now?
It was when we interviewed Tom.
But interviews.
They asked him something like, when are you going to be satisfied? Or when are you going to be happy? And he said, I don't know, if I could just, maybe just the next one.
Yeah.
Once I get that next one.
Yeah.
You know, and here he's come back out of retirement, probably the greatest quarterback of all time. Don't argue with me.
Right.
And it just seems like he has this, it's not enough, it's not enough, it's not enough. And the truth is, outside of Christ, whatever you make ultimate is, I mean, I'm not Gary Thomas, but just for a second here, I think a lot of couples can run into problems when they put the pressure on their spouse to be their meaning and existent, like my everything. And I was like, I can't take that kind of pressure. I'm not God, you know, like, I'm sorry, but if you're looking to me for everything you need, it's not going to happen. If you're fulfillment and desire, a life partner, yes, all of these things, you know, seek your highest good, yes, but ultimate satisfaction in me, like, I'm sorry, that's not what we were made for. We were made for communion with God.
Yeah, I was listening to Tim Keller the other day, and he talked about that with kids, right? We can tend to sometimes put kids, and you think of the burden we can place on kids if we say things like, you are the center of my world, you are the center of my universe. Think of the incredible burden we place on them, and as they grow up, right, there's no way they can live up to that because they were never meant to be that, and so they're always going to disappoint and disappoint us. But no, it's just a powerful reality of enjoying God. And I think that's one of the things that's lacking so much in our culture today. And I'm convinced that when we talk about things, whether it's, you know, the protests that we might see on various things, is that there is an increasing need for Christians to have joy and to show joy through daily interactions, but social media interactions, finding ways to do that well. And I mean, that's something that I've tried to work on. So full disclosure, one of the things I've tried to work on is cutting out on social media any form of sarcastic cutting humor. So I'm still sarcastic, but I had to qualify that, right? You can't get rid of my sarcasm. But sarcastic cutting humor, that's, you can hold me to that, right? And I know someone's going to play this clip like 10 years from now when I post something. And you said you would get rid of sarcastic cutting humor, but you clearly have not.
Canceled. They're going to cancel you. Canceled.
No, but I'm not going to post things on Donald Trump, Joe Biden, Justin Trudeau, and say something sarcastic about them. I don't think that fits with where God's, you know, taken me. And so, I don't know. That's
So it's interesting. Anytime someone says this, you know, harsh, unloving language is not the language of Christianity. Immediately someone speaks up and says, well, what about this? And what about this? And what about Jesus?
Going to the money changers?
Yeah. So speaking the truth in love, especially when you're protecting poor and vulnerable people or against evil, like, let's speak up. Let's be angry at the time. But that should be a gear maybe that we have that's rarely used. And I think it's fair to say that if you look at the life of Jesus, that gear was rarely used. Yeah. And was mostly reserved for like religious hypocrites.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so he didn't, And so I get concerned when it seems like the only gear some of my brothers and sisters in Christ have is the anger one.
Yeah.
And use like one or two examples from the scriptures of Jesus. And oh, ergo, I can be a big J jerk all the time.
Yeah.
I don't think that models Christian character. Yes, stand up for poor and vulnerable people. Yes, be angry at the right time. Be angry and frustrated that this world is not as it should be.
Yeah.
But I think there is an undercurrent of joy that is winsome and attractive. What do you think about that?
No, I'm with you. I share that because it's an ongoing journey. I mean, I just think of the ways I interact with people, whether it's at coffee shops or I just meet with people, you know, do you have like your regular face on where it's kind of like that, you know, for those that are watching online, a very dead face, right? And you just kind of walk around and the way, how do I interact with people? Do I speak well about people? Even at like at home, is one of the first things that I say when I walk in the door a complaint, right? Mm. That's frustrating for a spouse that you're always complaining about things. Your neighbors, the way that you bond with them, is it about complaining about what's going on in the world, the gas prices, things like that? I just think we often find points of connection by those things that cause us anxiety or frustration. And sometimes it's kind of funny. Sometimes I think it's maybe okay. But in general, it's just when you want to enjoy God and live from a heart of joy, I don't think that's very helpful in the long run.
Yeah. And we're supposed to give a ready answer to the hope that lives within us. So I think at the core of who we are, there's this steadfast assurance, there's hope. And a lot of folks don't have hope. Their hope is tied to their bank account. So when gas
or power,
So when gas is $6 a gallon, everyone has a religion, you know.
Yeah.
And so when that's not going well, they lose, and then they see you and they say, like, the math says Ez shouldn't be too happy because, you know, he's not like swimming in cash.
Yeah.
And this happened. Why? And I think we have hope. Well, we have hope. And we have hope in Christ. And I think we need to be able to articulate that.
When you have joy, you don't live from a sense of insecurity. And that's one of the things I've tried to focus on more, because I've done it so many times in conversations, and insecurity kind of manifests itself when you just talk about all the things that you're doing, all your accomplishments, right? So you sit down with a person and I catch myself how many times to this day doing that, where I'll talk about, oh, this is what I'm doing with a writing project, or this is what I'm doing with the Money Christian or whatever. And I get done and I'm like, oh, why did I do that? Right? Like I don't want to create relationships with other people where I'm constantly seeking ways to elevate myself, because that's at the end of the day what some of this is all about. You want to elevate yourself in social media interactions, right? It's so easy to just say that one little sentence or one little word that kind of cuts someone else down and elevates you. And I just don't want to be involved in that. And again, it's a journey that I'm on. But upcoming guest here, just to recap that real briefly, Bill Ury coming on next week. It'll be I think you're really going to enjoy that one, even if you've never heard of him or been familiar with his work. What he has to say on the topic of holiness, how God wants us to live, is so thought-provoking, and a subject he has dedicated many, many hours, I would say years, of his life.
Yeah. And he's practical. I think he'll not be stuck
in a classroom.
Yeah, he's a great teacher, but he's also his stories, and I'm looking forward to talking with Bill next week.
Yep. All right. Well, if there's something we said that made you think or is thought-provoking, leave us a comment below in our comments section on Facebook or Twitter, or send us an email, Ezra@themondaychristian.com or Dave@themondaychristian.com. Scrap that. Just send it to Dave@themondaychristian.com. If you have any problems, send it there. If you have any praises, send it to me. So have a good week, and we'll talk to you all next week.
Thank you for listening to the Monday Christian Podcast. To support our vision and find new ways to put your faith into action throughout the week, visit themondaychristian.com. That's themondaychristian.com.